Over the years, I've had a chance to talk with folks, ask if they know what state is our nation's biggest farming state, and common guesses you get are Iowa or Texas. Most folks, though, are surprised to learn that the nation's biggest farming state is better known for Hollywood or the Golden Gate Bridge. Yes, it's California. Today, the presidents of the California and Ohio Farm Bureaus are in to compare and contrast food production on the West Coast and in the Midwest. It's this week on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Those of you who are Town Hall Ohio regulars often hear us talk about the importance of agriculture to the Buckeye State. It is the same story out in California, where tens of billions of dollars of crops and animals are raised in the midst of 39 million people. What's similar and what's different between farming on the coast and farming here? We're going to find out this morning. Paul Wenger is president of the California Farm Bureau, and Frank Burkett III is president of the Ohio Farm Bureau. Mr. President, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having us here.
So, Frank, kind of a treat to have our fellow farmers in from California this week.
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity to host Paul on the California board here in Ohio.
So, Paul, why did you and your board come this way?
Well, we're a part of the Nationwide family of Farm Bureau states. There's 9 sponsor states, and so Nationwide, we're very involved in that. So we wanted to bring our board out to kind of see what Nationwide was all about. Excuse me. And so what was it, about 3 years ago, Ohio Farm Bureau Board came out to California for a 3-day meeting. And so we thought, with the Ohioans coming out to California, it was time for the Californians to come out here. We have a lot in common. We share a lot in common with Ohio Farm Bureau. We're both very progressive states, very populated states. Agriculture is still key to our basic economies. But yet we sometimes get overlooked and forgotten.
So I kind of threw it out there that California is a big farm state. I think most people don't really recognize that unless you're involved in the farming business. But give us an overview. It's big. It's diversified.
Yeah, we're very diversified. Of our board members that are here on this trip, when we made introductions to some of the folks at Nationwide yesterday, Ronnie Leimgruber, who's down in Imperial Valley, a heavy rainfall year for the whole year would be 1.5 inches of water. When he left, it was 125 in the shade, 145 on the asphalt. In Northern California, we had Blake Alexander, who is in the dairy business and free range eggs on the pastures behind the cattle. If they get up to 85 degrees, they're in a heat wave. And they had, I think they had something like 128 inches of rainfall. And so we run the gamut from very hot, very dry, to very wet and very cool, 350 different commodities. And so the diversity within a very long and narrow state like California is pretty substantial.
Now, we have pockets of this in Ohio, but one thing that's impressed me about California agriculture, you've got some extremely productive land and the ability to irrigate that land. And so these high-value crops, fruits, vegetables and such, nuts, those are big out your way.
Yeah, it's huge. We have a lot of those high-value crops and around the Mediterranean diet and fresh fruits and vegetables. It really comes down to climate. And so as we hear people talking about, well, what we can do in California, it's no different what you could do in Ohio if you had our weather. The soil's the same. And I was up at Jeff Sellers, who is on the board at Nationwide, was a past officer here at the Ohio Farm Bureau. Very unique soils there, very unique climate. He's doing some of the same things there we do in California, a lot of our folks in the leafy green industry. But it really comes down to climate. The soil's the same everywhere, and the availability of water. When you can turn a switch and put the water on when you need it, or open a head gate at a canal and put the water on when you need it, it's a lot better than sitting there looking at those clouds praying for rain.
So, Frank, give folks an overview of agriculture across the Buckeye State.
Well, when we look at the Buckeye State, we have a great mix of commodities, whether it be corn, beans, soybeans, and wheat, and animal agriculture combined. And then if you look at the diversity, a lot of similarities, maybe not quite to the extreme, but he talked about the leafy greens. You know, you have pockets in Ohio like that. You also have a lot of fruit and nursery stock as well. I can't speak for Paul, but if I was in California, I'd definitely choose the northern part of California. 85 degrees sounds much more desirable than 125 degrees to me.
So we do have some similarities. One that is maybe even more extreme in California than here, but I often joke, Paul, here in Ohio, we're on the eastern edge of the Corn Belt and the western edge of the population belt. Yep. And we've got 15 million acres of farmland with 11.5 million people literally right next door. 39 million people in the state of California. How does that proximity with big population centers affect how your farmers do their business?
Well, it's huge, especially in the political arena, where when we saw what happened at the national level with President Trump getting elected, and so we saw some movement a little bit to the right, especially with the Republican in the White House. At the same time, we went two-thirds supermajority in the House and every statewide elected office on the Democratic Party. That in itself isn't necessarily bad, except for the fact that most of those people come out of urban areas and have never farmed, haven't been around agriculture, don't know what agriculture is, even though they enjoy the fruits of our efforts three times a day. Less than 0.5% of our population is involved directly in production agriculture. And so when you think about in 2014, we hit the high water mark in the third year of a drought at almost $57 billion of farm gate value. And yet folks say we're not an agricultural state.
So, Frank, we have challenges here in Ohio somewhat similar. I often talk about how our biggest challenge in Ohio could be what I call permission to farm. I mean, farmers have learned to put tools in place to protect against market swings, and we have technology and seed that helps us protect against some weather extremes, but we're a little higher percentage than out in Paul's state, but it's a challenge communicating with the non-farm people who live right next door.
That's right, Joe. That challenge is real, and so, you know, as part of our organization, and especially when you look at the county farm bureaus, a lot of work being done communicating with the urban population centers around and amidst our farming operations, because in some instances, you know, we're farming right in some of those urban areas. When our board did have the opportunity to visit Paul and his board in California in 2014, I remember thinking when I left, I thought, you know, we have a lot of very similar issues, whether it's water quality, tax policy, and regulation. But when I brought that brutal red high back home, I thought, man, I am glad that I'm not facing the regulations that his group's facing in California.
We're chatting with the presidents of the Ohio and California Farm Bureaus. That's Frank Burkett, whom you just heard from, Paul Wenger from out in California. Speaking of farming around people close, Frank, your farm, your family operation's a perfect example. Tell folks a little bit about the dairy.
Well, I'm blessed to have an opportunity to milk 695 cows just about an hour south of Cleveland in the Akron-Canton area. Farm in a very urban area with three of my uncles, and it's a great great area, but a very populated area. An opportunity to host several neighbors to the farm to explain what we're doing on the farm, and it's always shocking that it was not what they anticipated at all when they have an opportunity to actually walk the farm, whether it's seeing the cows or the calves, and seeing what's going on in the community.
So sometimes farming's noisy, smelly, dirty. Making friends, opening up your farm, does it help maybe smooth that relationship over?
I think it does help. I think a lot of it's curiosity and what's happening on the farm and wanting to know, you know, hey, I've drove by that for sometimes years, and I never knew what happened back there. And so to have the opportunity to go visit the farm, to bring their kids to the farm, I think that gives us an opportunity to have a real impact, not only in the community, but for farming on a whole, not only in the state of Ohio, but even beyond as we look nationwide, because there's fewer and fewer people connected to the farm. So when we can make an impression – whether it's an adult or a young child, and share part of our experience and our lifestyle and our business with them, it's amazing how long that can stick.
Paul, how about your farm? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, Grandpa moved out from Pennsylvania in 1910. I live on the same land that he bought then and the same house that he built. Back then, we had two small dairy herds of 35 head each over the years. Then we got out of the dairy business when you had to go from grade B to grade A, and my dad said he wasn't going to milk cows anymore. Got into dairy beef, and when people decided they didn't want a half or a whole beef in their locker and they'd rather go to Costco or the local grocery store and get the cut they wanted, we were finishing out 100 to 150 a year. And so now we're into tree nuts. We're almonds and walnuts. Many people, I tell them I'm bilingual, almonds or almonds. we don't care what you call it, just eat a can a week and we're fine. Like we say, we knock the L out of them to get harvested. So what you eat is almonds. And but again, right now, that's what seems like there's a big demand with the whole push for the Mediterranean diet. And like I say, Dr. Oz really put us on the map. Talking about walnuts, heart-healthy oils, omega-3 fatty acids. And so we're seeing a big push right now for almonds, walnuts, and fresh fruits.
How about the mission of the California Farm Bureau? What's the purpose of the organization?
Well, as you know, Joe, when Farm Bureau, maybe most of your listeners don't know, we started with land-grant universities. You go into cooperative extension in your county, you had to have an organization of agricultural farmers, and you had to have over 50% of them in a group. And so that's where Farm Bureau was birthed. We're nearing our 100th anniversary, coming up in a couple of years here in California, American Farm Bureau. And I think you're pretty close as well. When's your 100th?
We're coming up in 3 years.
In three years. And so we're seeing a lot of the state farm bureaus turning 100, just as Cooperative Extension did. but today, it's not so much about teaching farmers how to farm and helping relay that information from the land-grant university system. It's advocacy. Working in our state houses, in our capitals, because we're such a small segment, but yet a very important segment of our economy. When you think about our national security, being able to feed and clothe ourselves, it's hugely important, but yet we are such a small minority that Farm Bureau today is an advocacy organization.
I could ask Paul what the Ohio mission was, and we'd use the same answer, Frank.
Very true. Working together for Ohio's farmers, and you know, while we're representing their needs across the state of Ohio, we're also enhancing and building the rural communities, which our neighbors and farmers live in alike. So, you know, bringing those pieces together, serving Ohio agriculture, recognizing within Ohio Farm Bureau the importance of all the levels of the Federation. And what I mean by that is our county farm bureaus and the great work they do there, Ohio Farm Bureau, and then our American Farm Bureau.
And one of the items that, just real quick, we've sort of expanded our definition of our most core membership, the farmer and the guy or gal on either side that buys from or sells to that farmer.
Yep, trying to bring like-minded individuals together, a group of us that think alike, that are serving the same purposes in our communities, and saying, hey, it's a big table. Come and join us.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the issues that are similar in California and Ohio with the presidents of the California and Ohio Farm Bureaus. Paul Wenger and Frank Burkett will be back right after this. Paul Wenger is president of the California Farm Bureau, and he's Frank Burkett's special guest. Frank's the president of Ohio, and the Buckeye State hosting the Golden State representatives from the Farm Bureau for a few days here in Ohio. Paul, you started to touch on this a little bit more, and I want to drill down. You made the point that less than half of a percent of the people in California, 39 million people, I can't do the math, but it's not very many, are involved in production agriculture, and yet that small percentage needs to have some influence at your state house. What's the game plan? How do you go about that?
Yeah, no, we have just a small minority of our elected leaders, and so we have 120 in the State House, 80 in the Assembly, 40 in the Senate. Very few of them have any agricultural production of any amount. We have some urban agriculture where we have that, but it, again, it's for that local, and it's a great, as you were talking earlier, and Frank, having people come out to the farm. So the urban agricultural settings are also important. And for those folks that are maybe farming a few acres in the shadow of a skyscraper in Oakland or in San Francisco or in Los Angeles, so that's important for that urban agriculture. But the big agriculture is still predominantly in the Salinas Valley, in the San Joaquin Valley, in the Sacramento Valley. We have very few representatives because it's based on population. So we are very politically active. We just have to be. And so we do a lot of tours for legislators. Because at the end of the day, you can have the public on your side, but it's those 120 people that are voting on legislative bills that you have to have on your side. Last year, we were the only state, we are the only state to have overtime for agricultural work on a daily basis. It's 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. So you could work 60 hours. If you went over 10 hours in a day, you got overtime. On the seventh day, you got overtime. There's only five states in the entire country that pay overtime for ag work. Last year, we got regulated to a 5 hour work, a 8 hour work day, 5 days a week, 40 hour work week, like other folks. I'm sorry, but the weather doesn't cooperate with a clock that goes from 8 to 5. And so we don't know how we're going to be able to transition into a 40 hour work week. It's going to be very difficult. Labor is hard to get. And they're really curtailing what the farm, the people that are farm employees, their ability to climb the economic ladder.
Frank, we have we don't have that, thankfully. We don't have the 120 degrees either. But the work of Farm Bureau, somewhat similar. There's not that many. 75,000 farms in Ohio in a state of 11.5 million people. We've got to have some clout down at the State House, too.
Sure do, and that makes the importance of our advocacy and elevates that as an organization. And as we look at that, not only the great work that our staff does within the walls of this building, but also we look at where it really happens. And that's where our members are advocating on behalf of the organization, sharing their personal stories, talking about their farm businesses, and how what happens at the State House here in Columbus impacts their business at home. That's where the real power of the story is.
And it's interesting, our members are busy. You know, they might be busy babysitting the grandkids, or they might be busy working off the farm, or they might be busy milking the cows. But when we give them a task, when we say, hey, this is important and it needs action, they come through.
That's what I love about our members. I've never been prouder of an organization. Their actions, even when I look as recently as CAUV and the issues that we're doing there, their actions and what they do on behalf of all farmers in the state of Ohio and sometimes across the nation, just there's no words.
Our guests are Paul Wenger, president of the California Farm Bureau, Frank Burkett, president of the Ohio Farm Bureau. Paul, you mentioned earlier that you got 120 people in your legislative body that are going to impact your farmers' ability to thrive, survive. But those 120 people are influenced by the public, by public opinion, by public relations. What's the approach of California Farm Bureau in reaching out to those consumers and voters?
Well, I wish they were influenced by public opinion, what people think. During the drought, we went into where they were taking water away from farmers. You probably read in the Central Valley, a lot of folks for 3 years straight had got 0% of their water deliveries. I mean, we're a state where we're heavy with water in the north, and we get it down in the Central Valley, Southern California. But if we can't move it through our pump system, and the endangered species prevents that, we need some assistance, not only at the federal level, but the state level. But again, it really comes to political action. And when we see these environmental groups spending huge amounts of money to get their right legislators in the legislature, we did polling of consumers, and consumers really do think farmers ought to have water to grow food. But that didn't emulate its way over until the legislature. So it's not just that those voters or those legislators are doing what public is telling them to do. They're doing what the folks that helped get them elected tell them to do.
You've got some great tools. The public relations communications team at California is exceptional. What are some of those tools you employ to to reach out to the public, magazine, TV. You got some good stuff going.
Yeah, I loved your promo song coming on, California Country. And so we have our California Bountiful program. We did have a magazine that was California Country, and now it's California Bountiful to talk about the bounty of California. We reach out much as what our Ohio magazine is. Really gets out, and it's more of a foodie type of a magazine, but to let folks know what agriculture really is, it's about food, it's about fiber. And then we, Ag Alert, we have for our voting members, we have our Ag Alert publication, which, you know, continues to be, it's a weekly, a couple of times during the year, we shut down for Christmas. So we do about 50 editions a year, but a great, great magazine to reach out to folks.
We'll follow up with a little bit about the Ohio Farm Bureau Communications Outreach, and then we're going to dig into some key issues that impact not just farmers, but entire communities, immigration, the environment, animal care. We'll be back to talk with Paul Winger and Frank Burkett when we return.
You might think I know about this place. They say there ain't other country about the Golden State. You go 2 hours north of the Hollywood sign to find farmlands miles wide.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Paul Winger is helping us learn about agriculture in California. He's the president of the California Farm Bureau. Frank Burkett is president of Ohio Farm Bureau. Paul's kind of proud of, as he should be, their communications outreach out in California. Of course, I'm a little bit biased, but I think we do okay in Ohio, too.
Well, and I've had an opportunity to see California Bountiful, great publication. I'm a lot biased, and so definitely for competitive nature with Paul, our Ohio, our communications group here at Ohio does a great job, and our Ohio is an example of that, and Buckeye Farm News that goes out to our members as well.
And, of course, the goal, too, is to just increase some familiarity. We always talk about so many people that don't understand agriculture. You mentioned your neighbors don't know what's going on. It's not quite as good as being on the farm, but if you flip through the magazine or visit the website or watch Our Ohio TV, you get some exposure to it.
The amount of feedback that I get from neighbors, non-farming community on those publications, the articles in those publications, even the recipes, it always amazes me.
We're going to switch over to run down some very important issues to communities across America and the farmers in particular of Ohio and California. Paul, one of the big things on the agenda, and it seems like it's just been since the last presidential race, but it's been on the minds of farmers for many, many years, and that's the ability to have a legal workforce. Immigrant labor is extremely important to your farmers, correct?
Huge. It's been an issue for us ever since IRCA in 1986. When President Reagan signed IRCA, the one thing they didn't do was a future flow program. So they came through a program to get people legal in the green card program that were here undocumented, but they didn't think about future flow. So as those folks retire, we don't have folks coming out of our colleges that want to go out in the field and pick strawberries and lettuce.
So what do you do about it? Let me back up a step. Give me a description of how much labor is needed on some of the crops that your members will employ migrant labor.
I have a fellow that calls me all the time. He's in his 70s. He's got apricots. He'll need 200 folks for about a week to thin his apricots in the spring. And he'll need probably 200 guys for over maybe for 3 or 4 days at a time between when the ripening happens to pick his fruit at the peak point of ripeness so they can ship them so they're not overly ripe and they're not too green. But he needs a lot of people for a short period of time. So it's very, very difficult to get those large numbers of people for 3 or 4 days. And that's why you got to have a mobile, portable worker group that's out there moving from ranch to ranch, commodity to commodity.
Now, we use the old term migrant labor because of what Paul just described. We need a lot of that in Ohio, but increasingly permanent labor we need immigrants for, because on dairy farms, hog farms, packing plants, that immigrant labor force is crucial to putting food on the table.
Yeah, the demand for year-round labor and having a consistent labor force in the industry, dairy industry, which near and dear to me, it's a challenge. And as we look at that moving forward, a lot of our federal programs around immigration have never, even still to this day, addressed that challenge of having a consistent workforce all year round.
So with the president being pretty high profile on this issue, what's the message from Ohio and California Farm Bureau regarding the wall and cutting out visas and so on down the line? What are we telling the president?
Well, Zippy Duvall, the president of American Farm Bureau, has met. There was a group of folks, about 18 of them, that met with the president in the White House talking about immigration. He gave him the word that he knows that there are people here that are undocumented. As long as they don't have a criminal element to them and they haven't broken any laws, they've paid their taxes, he wants to find a way to get them a legal documentation, not necessarily citizenship, but legal documentation. But beyond that, we need to figure out a way to allow people to get a worker visa. Much people talk about the old Bracero program. It's not a name that really resonates really well with folks, especially in the Hispanic community. But find a way for folks to be able to come back and forth and legally come across the border to work, whether it's for a week or two, because many of these folks farm in Mexico, but allow them to come back and forth. We don't have that right now. So building a wall is great. But until we are going to have our kids going back out in the fields picking the fresh fruits and vegetables that we all want to enjoy, we've got to figure out where we can find that migrant labor. Now, the other thing, Joe, that it's going to is mechanization. We're seeing a huge amount. They've got automated strawberry pickers and lettuce pickers on the horizon within the next 5 years.
Frank, what's Ohio's message to Washington?
When you look at that message, the message is safe, secure borders, but it definitely is a legal workforce. And when we talk about a legal workforce, it's not putting the burden of proving that legality on the employer. That's not the employer's job as farmers. That is not our space to operate. So as we look at to the future and we look at issues and legislation surrounding immigration, those are the two areas we need to make sure we focus on.
Just to clarify, not the farmer's responsibility. Are we being expected to be the one that says, yes, that document's legit?
Well, there's certain questions that you can ask when you employ and certain questions you aren't. But the problem is that if there is a raid on your farm, as they're so commonly called, and you don't know if that information they provide that you're legally allowed to ask for is accurate, you can only ask for that information, be provided it.
We'll be back to talk more about some top issues for California and Ohio when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
You can wish on four-leaf clovers, but all the fields have been plowed over, and there's nothing left to do but fly away.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. We're very happy to host the president of the California Farm Bureau, Paul Wenger. Frank Burkett is our president here in the Buckeye State and joins us on the show as well. One area of concern that our two states share, Frank, both from a farmer perspective and a consumer perspective, is agriculture's impact on our environment. Water quality, it's at the top of mind for farmers these days.
You've probably heard the word water quality before,
once,
Joe,
or twice.
So great to bring that up. Our board did our strategic planning last week and had an opportunity to tour the demonstration farms in the state of Ohio. Those farms are part of $1 million investment of members' dollars into water quality research in the state of Ohio. And so the board members had the opportunity to actually stand on those farms to witness the research that's being done currently, to think about what policy suggestions we need to do or change moving forward, and then also what future research we need.
That investment that you spoke of, to me, is evidence. It wasn't, frankly, that many years ago when farmers were a bit skeptical about this, their piece of the responsibility. That's turned 180 degrees. I don't want to say we're all in, but the farm community as a whole says, I've got a piece of this I need to own.
Yep, the farm community is committed to doing the research to look at ways that we can improve the environment. Hey, we live in the areas, our communities, our families, live, work, and play in those areas, and we want to leave the environment in a better situation than we found it. So sometimes it's not knowing what steps we need to take to do that. And what I mean by that is we don't know sometimes the impact of no-till and cover crops and those things. As we look at the demonstration farms, we have the ability to do the research to look at not only surface runoff, but tile runoff, and we have the ability to say, hey, what are these practices doing?
So I'm not really extremely familiar with the culture of California, but what I do know tells me you don't have any environmental pressures at all out there.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's all around the Endangered Species Act and everything, Joe. It's just you can't hardly make a move without having to file an environmental impact statement. Groundwater issues, we're going to have some presentations today from the Ohio Farm Bureau, and they've set some up for us. What you've been doing here, we just signed a MOU with the University of California, a lot of other organizations for a demonstration farm project in California. So we're kind of following the lead of Ohio. So we're going to really learn a lot today from the presentations that our board is going to hear. Nitrates in the groundwater, a huge issue for us. It's a huge issue in Salinas. What makes that area so productive is the sandy soils that allows them to grow a cornucopia of crops. But once that nitrogen gets below the root zone, where's it going to end up? And so it's not a matter of if we'll solve the problem, we will. It's just going to take some time. We've done on our crop protection materials. We will solve this problem. We just hope the regulators will give us the time to do it because we are dealing with a thing called Mother Nature.
So you guys are in the midst of, have a member out there who's in the midst of one of the more high-profile.
John Doherty.
Yeah, high-profile cases. Just in a nutshell, tell folks about the what John's facing.
John's facing huge fines that could put his family business under because of the fines. He's going to court right now as we're talking. But all he did was till his ground. He got direction from the Natural Resources Conservation Service that he could till his ground to 18 inches. He tilled his ground with a disc plow about 9 inches. Now, as you know, it will make high ridges and it will make low spots when you go through with a disc plow. And so the judge said he made many mountain ranges and lowlands. And so that's why he broke the Waters of the U.S. and the interpretation of the Waters of the U.S., which is a very liberal interpretation. I think this is scary for farmers across this country because if you put your ground in a conservation reserve program, and they're saying that he didn't farm that ground for 3 or 4 years. Well, you know what? If commodity prices are down, are you forced to go plant a crop that's not profitable? If the weather doesn't allow, what John did is atrocious. He ferreted out a skunk, and farmers and ranchers across this country have helped support him in his endeavors.
So we mentioned we might be a little bit worried about Trump's stance on immigration. Conversely, there seems to be more sympathy for this type of plight with the administration in Washington now.
There absolutely is, but we are in California, and the backlash for Trump is it's already been said that if he does anything on the Endangered Species Act, then they are going to do it in California. That means we could see even more species listed on the Endangered Species Act.
Yikes. We'll be back to learn more about agriculture in the great state of California and the great state of Ohio as we continue visiting with Paul Wenger and Frank Burkett. We'll be back with more of Town Hall Ohio in just a moment. Think of cotton out in California. You've got a little bit of that.
A little bit, but it's diminishing. We're probably 150,000 acres this year. At the high point, we probably had closer to 550,000 to 600,000 acres.
That's Paul Wenger. He's the president of the California Farm Bureau, the guest of Frank Burkett, our Ohio Farm Bureau president. Trade is a big deal here in Ohio. A lot of the major row crops and even some of our livestock products we ship overseas. Trade important to California agriculture?
Trade is huge. Majority of a lot of our crops, 80% of our almonds are exported, 70% of the walnuts, pistachios, you name it, a lot of our commodities. Hitting the Pacific Rim, we're in a good location to reach a big population on the Pacific Rim.
And Frank, Californians and Buckeyes, we need to be talking to the administration about trade issues, some things there that have farmers at least a little bit nervous.
Trade is critically important. Row crops, the livestock industry, And as we get into our area where we don't have that big coast, we talk about waterways and how we get that trade, those exports completed.
So another issue that is on the minds of many consumers, and that makes it on the minds of farmers, I think they consider this anyways. It's not like we're forced to, but animal care. We've been through quite a bit here in Ohio in dealing with it, and not any less so out in your state.
Nope. We had Prop 2, and in fact, we had folks from Ohio and Iowa out to see what happened after you couldn't have the cages for chickens, for laying chickens, and I know Ohio got very out in front of that, and it was controversial even within, I think, your realm, Frank, but you kind of got ahead of it so that you took HSUS and cut their legs out from underneath them maybe and made sure that it was, you know, the way that you guys could operate with it rather than having the legislature or initiative tell you what you're going to do.
Yeah, Ohio, farmers across Ohio took a proactive stance on the issue, developed the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Board, a great avenue to not only bring all the parties together, but to look at the implications, look at the science part of things, and the application within the industries in Ohio.
So as we look to the future of agriculture, Ohio, California, nationally, talk a little bit, if you would, Paul, about what California is doing to make sure that your successor and his or her successor and so on down the line, that we continue to have good leadership in agriculture.
We've got a lot of great young leaders. We just got to make sure that they have a place in that advocacy realm. And when you look at the millennials, especially, a lot of them want to be engaged, but maybe for a shorter period of time, and they're more issue-focused. And so as we look to the future, I think we've got some great leadership. The interesting thing is, when you look at the FFA and the 4-H, and you look at some of our the people that are getting involved in those from urban areas, we need to tap those folks because they talk differently than a second or third or fourth generation farmer. So we need to look to those first generation farmers. We need to look to those folks that are never going to farm, but they have a real desire to support agriculture. And so we got to increase their awareness.
One of the greatest things I've seen happen here in the last 5-6 years, Frank, 10 years ago, I'd go to a young farmer meeting and there'd be 100 people there. Now there's 600, 700, 800 people there. It's wonderful to see this next generation engaging.
It is wonderful. I had the opportunity to go to the winter conference this year and to see the number of people there. As we look at leadership in Ohio in the future, we look at our state board, the great leaders that are on there, but then we look where those leaders come from. We look at our county farm bureau boards. We look at AgriPower. We look at our young agricultural professionals. And then we look at the many great commodity organizations surrounding the state of Ohio that are doing great work.
So we've got a great mechanism, but as Paul said, we just need to get people engaged, and it's important for the industry. As we close out here, Paul, I'll give you a 30-second pitch. If you're a farmer, why Farm Bureau?
Farm Bureau is the only organization that covers all the commodities, all the regions of your state and your counties. Commodity groups are great, but they need that general ag organization. Farm Bureau in every state in this country is the largest general ag organization. You got to support Farm Bureau if you want to support agriculture.
Frank, real quick.
When I think of Paul, I think of John Doherty, and I think of many mountain ranges being created by a chisel plow. I think I want to belong to an organization when something like that happens to me individually that I turn around and I know Farm Bureau has my back and the entire farming community that surrounds me and the state and the nation has my back.
I want to thank both of you for your thoughts and your time today. Paul Wenger, president of the California Farm Bureau, Frank Burkett, our president here in Ohio. And thanks to all of you for tuning us in this week on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.